Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It is time for Movies and Booze. Serena Bellissimo, Leslie Williams and Deirdre Malumbi are with us once again. Good afternoon,
good afternoon.
To you all.
Hello.
And today Leslie has brought us wine from the Socialist Workers' Paradise of the People's Republic of China.
It doesn't feel like a Socialist Workers' Paradise when you're over there. Everything's huge. I mean, I couldn't believe, I mean, it was bling. It was like, you know.
Oh, no, it's totally bling. Yeah, it couldn't be more capitalistic, really. So, but the wine is a growing thing in China.
Huge,
they can't get enough of it.
So 2003 was when Helan Mountain, which is a mountain range between Mongolia and central China. I was in the city of Yinchuan, which is in Ningxia province. And so Ningxia itself is considered the best wine region, but Helan Mountain in Ningxia is considered the first Appellation Contrôlée, our first sort of high-quality wine region. And it really is. I mean, what I was doing there was, there's a wine competition called the Concours Mondial Bruxelles, and otherwise people have been invited before. This is my first time to be invited. They have their wine competition every year, and the Chinese wanted to promote their wine region, so invited them over and spent a fortune putting us up in 5-star hotels and treating us to dancing girls and stuff every night, and it was very fancy.
These are just women who are doing a dance.
Well, no, I just mean that there are lots of kind of acrobats and stuff.
That could be misinterpreted,
my apologies.
Yeah.
So we were tasting like wines from Alsace, Lisbon, whatever. But the best flight we did, the best tasting we did, was Marcelin, which is an obscure grape, from Ningxia. I mean, the wines were stunning. There were several gold medals given in that section. And almost all the other categories struggled to get gold medals. But the wines were stunning.
Okay.
Cabernet is what they were trying. They're trying to make Bordeaux. And it's now kind of reckoned that maybe that doesn't work as well. I mean, it does work. I mean, this is one. Cabernet doesn't ripen quite as well there because it's a short growing season over there because it's a desert. I mean, this is the Gobi Desert we're in. But Marcelin seems to really suit that. Marcelin is a cross between Grenache and Cabernet, grown in the Languedoc. It's fine, but I've never had an exciting one until I went to China, and they were all stunning.
So, okay. Also, I mean, you never hear, like Eamon said it on the news, they're hot when they say that, because you never hear hot. There is a direct correlation between the word hot and let's go and buy a bottle of rosé.
There completely is. You get a bad May, rosé sales can suffer all. People start drinking it in May, and if you get a good May, it'll keep going all the way through. And yet, literally, when the weather is warm, that's who people are looking at. You've got to keep stocking the fridges with your rosés. And that's why I thought we should bring a rosé. Yeah. It's been very nice.
Absolutely. Elio, this is abducted by aliens, but not in a bad way.
Yes, exactly. It's the latest Disney Pixar movie, basically. So I'll be talking kind of about if it's suitable for your family and little ones and all of that.
Yeah, and it's... Adjust that a little bit, so
thank you.
You're a bit off mic. That's a technical term. I don't understand you.
Well, thank
I expected
you, for that.
You to understand that. So it's a Pixar one. So, like, you can almost kind of go Pixar movie, and you don't even need to tell people something about the movie.
Or is
that kind of starting to wear a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Pixar have had as good a run in kind of recent years. Like, I'm remembering that era of like the 2000s when they had, you know, WALL-E and Up and Incredibles, like all of those movies in a row were all like so fantastic. And I mean, aside from Inside Out 2, which was kind of a really big box office success, they've kind of been a bit more hit and miss lately. Like Elemental was one movie like I really loved, for example, but it didn't do great at the box office. It probably had more mature themes. So I think that what Disney Pixar is kind of struggling with at the moment is trying to find like subject matter that's going to appeal to both kids and kind of more mature like adult audiences, basically their parents. Whereas now they're kind of either going for like the latter or the former. And I would say this one is very much geared more so towards the kids.
Yeah. And 28 years later, finally has arrived.
It has finally arrived. Yeah. So it's obviously the sequel to like 28 days later, 28 weeks later. And this itself actually is going to have a sequel. It was shot back to back with its sequel, which is going to be called 28 years later, The Bone Temple, directed by Nia DaCosta. But what's exciting about this installment is that director Danny Boyle is back. Writer Alex Garland is back and cinematographer Anthony Dodd Mantle are all back. They would have all been involved with the original 28 days later. So that's quite exciting.
Okay, well, we'll find out just how exciting later on the show. So when you get an honorary Oscar, Serena, does that mean you're never going to get a real one?
I reckon this is when, you know, you've you've probably deserved one your whole career, and they're going, you're getting a bit long in the tooth, let's give you one just in case. Although Tom Cruise still does have some time to get an Oscar.
It's not that you wouldn't look at Tom Cruise and go, wow, he's so old, he's past it now. Yeah.
Like, he's only in his 60s, but there's, you know, a lot of people have been saying, are they giving him his Oscar now because they want to bring some of the glitz and glamour back to the Oscars? Because some of the high profile names don't even bother going. But in saying that, these are going to be given out in November. So unless you get an honorary Oscar, he may go back as a presenter or something. But they're giving it to four people: Tom Cruise, Dolly Parton, Debbie Allen, and Wynn Thomas, who's a production guy. Debbie Allen is a choreographer. She's amazing. She's had an amazing career. Dolly Parton has done amazing stuff. Dolly Parton's getting it from a humanitarian.
Okay, yeah.
Tom Cruise is getting it because of everything he's done to cinema. I mean, a lot of people have said that he's the one that saved cinema after COVID. He came back with Top Gun,
sure.
Maverick,
yeah,
and everyone went to see that. And so they're also recognising his stunts. I mean, the man has been nominated.
Phenomenal. Yeah,
he is.
Yeah.
He has been nominated. We forget because he's become, ever since he jumped on that couch during that Oprah Winfrey interview, he's been fighting to get his
public game as not a nutcase.
Integrity back. Yeah. So he has been nominated three times. He's
so
just never
guess.
Won.
Born on the 4th of July, Magnolia.
Yep.
And the 3rd.
Jerry Maguire.
Okay.
Yeah.
And everyone, I remember when Rain Man came out, everyone was surprised. He deserved an Oscar probably for that role. So look, he's finally getting his honorary Oscar, but, you know, if Tom Cruise, we don't know Tom Cruise, but we know Tom Cruise as in, I don't think this really means the world to him. I think he would rather get an Oscar for his work.
I think absolutely. And it's probably even slightly insulting to give him one at this point, because I would imagine Tom Cruise and think, no, I'd still have a shot here.
Exactly. He's only in his 60s. Like everyone else we spoke about, are at least in the next decade, like 70s, almost 80. So, yeah, as I said, I think he's been given this, though, because he hasn't been to the Oscars in a while. They probably want the movie stars back at the Oscars. So they're hoping that they may turn up.
You know, when they say, now, obviously, people did go back to the cinema after COVID to watch Top Gun. But is it overstating it to say he saved cinema? Wouldn't it be fair to say the cinemas, he maintained it on life support and it still is to a certain extent?
Probably. Dave, would you agree? It's probably event cinema. Like cinema now has become, unfortunately, people aren't going to watch the indie movie at the cinema. Everyone wants the big event.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Top Gun Maverick was like a huge success at the box office post-COVID. And I think people were expecting it to maybe be, you know, Christopher Nolan's Tenet. And it wasn't that at all in the end. I think that he deserves a lot of credit. I mean, it's funny you say the fact that he's like, does he actually have a chance at kind of winning the Oscars anymore? There's a very good New York Times article and it kind of has the insight that he basically kind of stopped trying after the film Valkyrie. That was probably his last effort at kind of doing something dramatic. And then he kind of basically abandoned that career altogether and just went into action movies and stunt work. And that's what he's been doing since. And even like a bit of comedy. Like he can be very, very funny. I mean, Tropic Thunder is a bit.
I was going to think about that.
It showed his comedic chops.
Yeah. Like you're right. He's actually hilarious. He is a well-rounded actor.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, some of his personal antics have gotten in the way of, and you know, that whole link to Scientology and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really sad that, well, it's not sad for him. He's making millions of dollars. He's fine. He's doing what he loves. But, you know, he doesn't have, people won't talk about Tom Cruise like they talk about Al Pacino or Robert De Niro. And I think that's what he ultimately wants.
I think he's a better actor than Al Pacino. I think Al Pacino just overacts in everything. He shouts, he roars. I think he's terrible.
He plays Al Pacino in a variety of situations. In one, he was blind.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, pretend you can't see that, Al. Oh, I can't see it!
And that's when he got his Oscar. I suppose, at least with Tom Cruise, they're saying it's an honorary one. I remember when Al Pacino won his Oscar and everyone's going, well, that's sort of like an honorary Oscar. It's your turn to win.
Yeah,
so
true.
At least they're going, it's your turn to win. Here's your pretend Oscar.
Though, is there a difference now politically that between the time Al Pacino got his to now, the white guy who might have dubious politics will never get the Oscar?
I don't know. It's still
Hollywood.
I
know I'm making a dramatic, a kind of anti-woke point, but there might be a bit of that.
Do you think? I think at
there's a lot of old white guys on the panel. Yeah, on the boats of them, isn't there?
Yeah, that's why I think.
No, but they're all like super hypersensitive now. But we don't want to appear to be seen to be anything. You know?
I mean, Adrian Brody won the last Best Actor Oscar, and he had that controversial moment with wasn't it Halle Berry? So I don't know if controversy really matters.
But did he? I was like, he kissed her, and she didn't really ask to be kissed.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think there's so many old white guys on these voting panels that until the voting panels actually change, the fact that there are the new rules now that I didn't know that you didn't necessarily watch all the movies before you place your vote.
No.
Like that has only become a rule for next year's Oscar that you have to watch all the movies in order to vote for the categories, which you would have thought would have been done.
Mm.
Anyway, I imagine Tom Cruise gave up when he found out that LeBron James might go into acting. hasn't he done a bit already? No, I know it was like basketball related.
Do you remember that one? Yeah. Space Jam and New Legacy. Yeah, and he was also in Trainwreck. So he was playing himself. What he's saying is, this isn't I'm retiring, because a lot of people keep asking him, it's time to retire. And it's like, no, my body's still working. So as long as my body still works, I'm going to keep going. But what he's saying is when he does retire, he wants to continue acting, but he doesn't just want to play himself. He wants to find roles that further him, because he does have a production company. So suppose when you have all the money in the world, you can do whatever you want. So whether or not you can or can't act, you can give yourself that opportunity to try. And that's what he's going to do.
I feel like we're going to see him in an actors on actors with like some like
Tom Cruise interviews him about his process. Right. What wine are we going to talk about?
So we are starting with rosé.
Okay.
If you could pass that, I'll give you
A whole lot of rosé. Okay. And this as.
So it is Clos de Lomme, L-O-M, Monastrell. I got it in the Corkscrew. I think they may be importing it, actually. So Tomáš in there was saying, this is the one for the lads.
For the lads?
In his Polish accent. Well, in the sense that it's quite a meaty rosé, I think. It's Monastrell.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, we tend to think of rosé as a place as from Provence, and that's the most famous place it comes from. And they tend to be quite pale. Spanish rosé is often a little darker in colour. People think it's going to be sweeter. It isn't. It's just darker in colour. They just extract a little more colour. I mean, rosé is very simple. You just leave the grapes on their skins for a bit when you're fermenting, and the more longer you leave it on, the more colour comes off. But this is a lovely pale colour. It's a mid-range now. But Spain, I would just like to encourage people to think of as a rosé destination, especially on that east coast. Monastrell works really, really well as a rosé. There's a nice kind of blood orange and kind of...
it's zingy. I really like it.
Nice. Yeah. And a bit of wheat and a bit of fruit. And what do you think?
It's not just for the lads.
No, it's not.
This girl actually quite likes it.
Well, in the sense that there is still sometimes that real men don't eat quiche or drink rosé, but I think hopefully that's changing, because we really do.
Sorry, they don't eat quiche either.
That was a book years ago. Real men don't eat quiche.
Yeah.
It was the thing. Yeah.
We were old. We remember.
Okay.
That eastern coast of it's always a really good value place to get wines as well. So Valencia, Alicante, Humilla, Yecla, all around there, there's some interesting rosés, and that's why I thought. And also I was thinking east, because I've got another eastern wine. I mean, this is eastern Spain. That's as close as I could get to a connection.
At the same time, and I know everyone, for obvious reasons, it gets a bit warm, people are buying rosé. Why don't they buy a lighter bottle of red wine and put that in the fridge? Shocker.
You absolutely can do that. And in fact, in Spain, I was in Logroño, which is the second Rioja town. Haro is the main one and Logroño is the more commercial one. And they've quite a good tapas trail. And I was with a wine producer and we were drinking their reserva. Like, they'd been instructed to give us their reserva, which they wanted us to try. And it was chilled, like 4 degrees fridge temperature. And which you never would do to an oaked wine normally. This is quite an oaky wine. It worked really well. And it was a warm evening and we're walking around drinking chilled red wine. And absolutely. And light red, so like Beaujolais is the classic one. In fact, you'll struggle to get Beaujolais not chilled frequently in France. But we have this notion. And can I also say, by the way, room temperature is not room temperature in Ireland, which is 24 degrees. It's room temperature in a bloody castle with no central heating. It's 16 degrees, okay?
Okay, good to know. Because generally speaking, we drink our white wine too cold.
In fact, good white wine, like a good Burgundy, should be drunk at about 10 degrees, which is, twice as warm as freezing temperature, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, so, but having said that, yeah. So started with it cold and it will get warmer, you know, so that, you know. But yeah, you absolutely can't taste anything when a wine is four degrees. Having said that, if someone brings you really, really crappy wine, stick it in the fridge.
Yes.
It wasn't until I moved out of home that I found out that you don't store your wine in the fridge, because my parents always had their red wine in the fridge.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So I had no idea that it was actually supposed to be at room temperature.
It will keep better in the fridge as well. I mean, it does seem to help.
Oh, so so your parents aren't wrong.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, we won't tell them that.
No, never tell your parents they're right. Right, so Deirdre, what movie would you like to talk about first?
Well, we start with 28 Years Later.
Okay, 28 Years Later, coming up after this.
There are many kinds of death. And some are better than others. This is a glorious day. The day of judgment.
My children!
There's no discharge in the war.
Okay, that's 28 years later, the follow-up to 28 weeks later. How long? It hasn't been 28 years since 28 weeks.
I meant to actually look up here the 28 days later. I think it's sometime in the 2000s. So
yeah.
I don't think it's quite 28 years
later. But close enough. Yeah. Artistic license, sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But if in 28 weeks later, wasn't it all sorted out? And or you know, in terms of zombies and viruses and all that.
See, I haven't seen Weeks, but the whole idea with this one anyway is that it's been 28 years since the second outbreak of the Rage virus. So possibly there's a tie in there to Weeks. And the whole idea is that it has been eradicated in continental Europe, but only because Great Britain has been placed under indefinite quarantine. And essentially what we're doing in this particular movie is we're going into this community of survivors, which lives on this kind of island village, which is separated from the mainland by this like big kind of causeway. And primarily we're following this family, which consists of mum Isla, who's played by Jodie Comer, dad Jamie, who's played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, and son Spike. He's kind of like, you know, that precocious age of like 12, 13. He's played by Alfie Williams, who essentially leads the movie and I have to say is really, really exquisite here. So that's kind of our way into the story, I suppose. And apparently there is like a kind of Brexit metaphor there. So
I think we spotted that already. Yeah.
So if you want to read into it.
Yeah. You know. And so they're living not an idyllic life, but at least a safe life away from the zombies prowling all over the rest of Britain.
Exactly, yeah. And they don't have like kind of access to like mobile phones and stuff like that. And they have to like kind of, you know, grow their own food and stuff like that. And sometimes they do have to go to the mainland to get like supplies and stuff like that. So that's why there's this kind of causeway that's leading from the island to kind of mainland Britain. And there's quite a funny scene in which like they meet a character who's played by Edwin Riding, and he's like, don't you have this? Don't you have that? And it's kind of a small, I suppose, cameo role, but he brings some like surprising comic relief. And it's a great cast. So aside from like Comer and Johnson, who I would have mentioned there, Ralph Fiennes pops up. You would have heard his voice in the trailer there, actually. Some people might have seen Jack O'Connell associated with the movie, particularly after Sinners. I'm sure people are really excited to see him again. I have to say his appearance in the movie is very, very short. I'd imagine he's going to play a bigger role in the sequel if the film so far is anything to go by. Every time a new character pops up in this film, something absolutely bonkers and unpredictable happens. But that's actually partly what I really liked about this movie, is that it doesn't just stay like to the kind of typical horror generic things, you know, like particularly towards the end, it actually takes quite a like poignant and moving turn, which I didn't really see coming at all. Like I was like, I'm watching a horror movie and I kind of want to cry right now. Like what is going on?
Okay. You know,
at that, I think it's still going to be too scary for you. So you were kind of looking at me hopefully there, but I know you, it's too scary for you.
I'm scared by the poster. Like the fact that there's all those skulls on the poster. I was like,
But say in terms of, I assume their isolated life goes horribly wrong for some reason or another. And can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, and they're kind of like little, I suppose, it's kind of hard to talk about because I know that people are like, don't give any spoilers. But basically they do make some like journeys to the mainland, which eventually have like, you know, kind of dire consequences and take turns that, you know, they don't quite expect. So they do like, you know, come face to face with like these creatures, and basically there are two types. There are the slow kind, which are kind of these big gelatinous, like crawling kind of, they almost look like weird, big, grotesque babies. It's very, very weird. And they're kind of the slow moving, like zombie type of characters. I know I'm not technically meant to say zombie because people are like, they're not zombies, they're zombies. Okay, guys. And then there are the fast ones, which are like all kind of skinny and screaming and dirty, and they're naked and their limbs just flying everywhere. And they're absolutely horrifying as well. So, definitely, if you're looking for the horror elements, you're going to get plenty of that in
this. And do the family have to embark on a journey to safety? Is it that kind of trope?
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that's probably enough. Wasn't Cillian Murphy in the first one?
He was. He's serving as an executive producer on this particular one. Now, he has teased possibly being in the sequel. I don't know about that. He might just be trying to get bums in seats. But at that, you know, the movie didn't necessarily need him in this particular one. I do remember when the trailer came out, there was like this zombie that for whatever reason kind of looked like Cillian Murphy, and people thought that might be him. It's not him though.
Yeah, that's cute marketing. Yeah. That's
it might have been.
There will be a sequel, and does it, given you watch this one, does it deserve a sequel?
I think so. Yeah I mean, I'm very intrigued to see what happens next. I found myself like surprised at many moments in this film, which I don't think you can necessarily say for a lot of movies anymore. Now, there are moments in it, like I said, with particular like character appearances, and it's just so wacky sometimes. But then I also thought, like, it's, if you love kind of the classic like Danny Boyle stuff, like, you know, Trainspotting and stuff like that, I kind of could appreciate that you could see classical Danny Boyle kind of written all over it. So I enjoyed that aspect of it as well. But yeah, I would say kind of overall wasn't what I was expecting, but I quite liked it, and it's stylish too. I thought the cinematography was very kind of creative as well. There's some interesting like editing going on, like there's some like historical battles kind of interspersed into the like real world, and some dreamy footage in red, and some like great horror, like kind of jump out of your seat moments. Now, I found myself not jumping as much as I usually do, but it's only because everyone around me was kind of jumping. So because they preemptively jumped, I did not jump.
Okay,
so that was kind of nice.
This doesn't bother me at all.
No, usually I would be the one.
Deirdre Malumbi is so cool.
I would usually be like the one comically like tossing the popcorn in the air. Yeah. I'm jumping so high, you know.
Okay, so you enjoyed it.
I liked it. Yeah.
Even though you wouldn't normally like a kind of a horror-ish film.
I'm not mad about horror movies, but I'm usually kind of better with like zombie, vampire, monsters.
Did
like,
you watch The Walking Dead? Because I've been watching that recently. For the
No,
it's pretty
it's a
visceral
very
as well.
Commitment, you know, that's the only thing. Like, I would prefer to watch, like, if I have to watch, like, a horror, like, I'd rather be, like, a horror movie. But yeah, anything involving, like, creepy children or, like, psychological stuff, like, I can't.
Yeah,
those things. Yeah,
you mean the kind of what's that strange noise movies where
like
somebody has to go to investigate,
the Ring, stuff like that, or like, you know, creepy people just being like creeps. Like, I can't even watch Heretic, you know, even though that's Hugh Grant.
That's
I'm like
good.
Looking at it and yeah. like, no, it looks too creepy.
Okay, yeah. No, he was good in that, I thought, actually. He was. Now, this is in cinemas now?
This is in cinemas now?
Yeah. Okay. And so, when was the last time Ron Howard made a film?
That's a really good question. Actually, I can't remember the last time you made a film.
Yeah, feels like it's been a very long time.
I mean, the only one that's coming to mind is like Solo, which he had to take over. Remember from...
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a bit of... That wasn't his finest moment.
I feel like there's been one or two since, but nothing's jumping to mind. Yeah.
He's been doing, like, him and Brian... What's the... His producing partner's name, Brian something. Anyway, I know they've been doing a lot of producing and stuff, but I can't remember the last time... He's done anything. And it's funny that what they're talking about him coming back with is like another firefighting movie. And if you know Ron Howard, you know Backdraft from 1991 was one of his biggest ones. And talking to star as the lead is Glenn Powell. Like, his star is just, we mentioned Top Gun, Maverick.
Yeah.
Since then, he's just like gone through the stratosphere. So we don't know much about it, but there's a lot of excitement about it. Apparently, they were talking about a Backdraft remake. I'm so glad they're not doing that. And there probably will be elements of Backdraft in this, but he's going to be a Texas firefighter, and he has to face wildfires that are sweeping across his state. But at the same time, of course, he's tackling personal battles with his childhood friend, who's now a firefighter. So it could be interesting. I have to admit, I will watch anything that Ron Howard does, because it's usually really good.
Yeah, and there's kind of almost like a, well, there is, not almost like, there's a Ron Howard formula, almost tonally.
Yeah.
Maybe the world needs a bit of...
I think
needs a bit of that. That might be,
we do.
And look, be a nice thing. Brian Grazer, that's who we were trying to think of.
That's who it is, yeah. And look, Ron Howard as well, like we were talking about Tom Cruise, his type of films are the type of films that you also want to watch in the cinema as well. So hopefully this will be a big event cinema.
So, yeah, maybe he'll save cinema. And Miley has performed with Beyonce in Paris.
My social media was going off last night.
You mentioned Glen Rowe and that really confused me there for a second.
We did an OB yesterday on a boat going down the Shannon, which was absolutely lovely. But Mary McAvoy was there doing adult.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a small audience there, but like everybody called her Biddy. Nobody called her Mike. Yeah. Nobody called her Mary at all.
So yeah, like, still to this day,
it's long gone.
Now,
like,
she was very gracious about it, but I'd be chucking people off the boat if it was like, I have been in other things, you know.
And I'm pretty sure when she heard that Miley took to the stage with Beyonce, she wasn't thinking of Glen Rowe.
It was his revenge.
She's on the Cowboy Carter tour at the moment, Beyonce, and she was in Paris, and she hasn't brought any special guests on, and this is the first time Miley's been in Paris promoting her new music, and they've got Two Most Wanted on Cowboy Carter. She came out. They looked fabulous in their gold sparkle. And do you know what? There was not much fanfare. Like, she turned up. My God, the crowd went wild. They came out. They did their song. And then she left. But it was brilliant. Like, if I was in that audience, I would have been thrilled to see the two of them together.
It's Pop Girl Summer or something, isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it all women are headlining in almost all the festivals and so
on? It's been Pop Girl Decade for a while. Yeah, I think women are really rocking it at the moment, and it's great to see.
And they're supporting each other, which is good. Isn't
yeah, yeah, pretty it's brilliant. Much yeah. So I would have, and look, the social media was hilarious. It was just like, oh my God, I chose London, or I chose this other city. I should have chosen Paris. So, we'll see. This might be the start of Beyonce bringing out more people in her tour, or maybe it was just a one-off.
Well, I'd say it probably depends on, because, you know, Charlie XCX played
I was
Malahide
at that.
And
yeah.
Lord, on other occasions, Lord came out and sang with her, but Lord wasn't there. But I assume it's just availability.
And so this is the issue, right? So I went to Charlie XCX with my 14-year-old and she's like, oh my God, who are they bringing in? And this is the thing. Now it used to be enough just to go to see your artist. Mm. And Charlie XCX, the way she commanded that stage, she was incredible. And that should have been enough. But now there's this expectation of, oh, we didn't get a special guest. And sometimes it's okay not to get a special guest. Yeah. You're just getting the star that you've gone to watch.
Well, they're not going to come to Dublin, let's be honest.
Why? Yeah. That is a bit of a problem at the moment, you know, us having to fly out to see the massive pop stars. It's a bit sad.
Will Smith rejected Inception because he didn't understand it. Well, that's like most people.
Yeah, I know. But he didn't get it. He was after Christopher Nolan came off The Dark Knight. He actually offered Inception to Will Smith. Leonardo DiCaprio ended up playing it. But Will Smith said he saw it and he was just like, I don't get it. And instead he went on to make Men in Black 3 and the film that everybody loved, not M. Night Shyamalan's After Earth. He made that instead of Inception. But like, he's famously done this before, Sean.
Yeah, The Matrix.
He turned down The Matrix because he didn't really understand what was happening in The Matrix either. And
Maybe if it wasn't for him then, if he didn't understand
Then unfortunately, right, you wish when he turns these things down, he then goes on to make something amazing.
Yeah.
With The Matrix, he went on to make the critically panned Wild Wild West. So, you know, maybe sometimes, Will, if you're not understanding it, that might be the time for you to, like, jump in and do it.
Has he ever won an Oscar?
Yeah.
Don't you remember The Slap?
Well, I remember The Slap, but won an Oscar.
Yeah. Was that year? King Richard.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
Do you remember he slapped Chris Rock?
Oh, and no, then
everyone,
yeah.
No, but everyone was like, after it, there is no way if he wins, he'll take to the stage. And he won for King Richard and he went up and did his acceptance speech.
Yeah. Ron Howard did 13 Lives 2 years ago, the movie about the Thai boys football team that got trapped in caves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Didn't see that one. Yeah. Did you watch that one, Dee?
I don't think I saw the movie. I think I saw the documentary series that was out around the same time.
Yeah.
Do you remember there were two around the same time? Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
But that's not the same as this movie. Have you been to Madrid? No, I've been to Portugal. That's pretty much the same thing, isn't it? Right, you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We do take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
News Talk's Summer Cash Machine.
Jesus, that's some laugh your woman has there. Congratulations to Tracy. Kieran, I'll have a new total on the hard shoulder coming up next. So let's toast Tracy's success with a Chinese wine.
Yeah, so we are in Helan Mountains, which is the Horse Mountain range, which is one side is Mongolia, one side is Yinchuan, or Ningxia province. So central China, about 1,000 miles in from Beijing, but you're only halfway across China at this point. Sandy soil, pebbles, so short growing season, Gobi Desert. I mean, so they reclaimed all the land and the Yellow River flows through there, so they do need a bit of irrigation and so on. But I mean, honestly, like 25 years ago, they started doing this and longer. And there was one, like one winery I was at, met the winemaker, and she was a woman in her late 40s, but she had photographs of herself and her dad planting the vineyard 20 years, you know, whatever, earlier. And and as I said, the quality is really high, and I think this is gorgeous. It's a Bordeaux style, and would be, you know, it'd be the price of good Bordeaux.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
But I would argue that there's many a Bordeaux that costs more than this. It is nowhere near as interesting.
Yeah.
It's 90% Cabernet, 10% Merlot. And they are, as I was saying, moving towards Marsalan and some other grapes. Riesling and Chardonnay can be good there as well. And look, they're putting money in. And China, weddings are a really cool place to get married as a Chinese winery if you're in China. And a lot of them have sort of hotels attached to them.
But they're making this for export. That's the interesting thing.
And presumably for some of the expat community and so on as well. I didn't see this one, but I did see some of it available in supermarkets, less expensive than here, but more expensive than other forms of alcohol. I mean, look, it's 1 billion people, and obviously it's a small number of people are drinking wine, but if you just get a little bit more, like 0.5% more, that's a lot of wine.
Yeah.
I mean, Australia's been doing gangbusters there, you know?
Yeah.
Until he said something about that annoyed them, and then he put huge sanctions on them. He couldn't sell that wine for about 3 years.
Okay.
Sorry, to
Trumpy kind of reaction there, wasn't it? Where did they originally get the vines from?
Bordeaux stock. Now, I know they did plant Carmenere, which is an obscure, long-gone Bordeaux grape, but you find it in Chile. So I presume they probably got those stocks from Chile. But no, it was Bordeaux, and they brought over Sepp Moser from Austria and many well-known winemakers who are associated. There's no famous name associated with this. I just didn't give the name. So it's Canaan Winery, Pretty Pony.
I think it's kind of... Okay, that's
And it is Horse Mountains. And and there was, like, we visited burial mounds from emperors from the 10th century. I mean, like, which is 10,000 years ago, is it? It was 10,000-year-old rock carvings we saw. And then and that was different than we saw. Like, literally, they were saying they were 10,000 years old, which is kind of extraordinary.
Yeah.
But it was a fascinating place to visit. I mean, the city itself of Yinchuan was, like, I spent time wandering around and had really good food and hard to find anything craft. I had to go to the supermarket to buy a Chinese cleaver. I wanted to bring something home. I thought there'd be porcelain and, like, no, it's like sports gear. And, you know, it felt like, honestly, it felt like Henry Street, you know, but with people shouting at me.
Well, Henry Street is people shouting at you as well. That's pretty similar. But you can buy this in Ireland.
Yeah, sorry, I should mention. Yeah, so yeah. Corkscrew have it in Dublin, city centre. Also, J.G. O'Driscoll's near Douglas there, a great shop. They have it, and they have the Riesling in this as well, which is less expensive. But the red is really, I think, where it's at. I think this is gorgeous.
Yeah,
chocolatey, licoricey, it's really
extraordinary.
Like a fine Bordeaux, basically. Yeah. And it's 2019 vintage, I should mention. If you go in and ask for if you can't remember the name, just ask for the Chinese wine.
Right. Then they won't have a big selection, in fairness.
No, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Oh, lovely. Right, so... Ryan, JFK's family are giving out about Ryan Murphy. He didn't consult them about American Love Story. Why would he?
I know. And like in New York, they're saying that there's a rule that, you know, if you're dealing with a public person and they're alive, you can't be doing stuff with them. But he's not alive anymore. So, and he's a person of interest. And look, I think what they're upset about is that they're probably working on their own sort of thing. And when it comes to Ryan Murphy, I love his stuff, but I love his stuff because it's so soapy, it's so over the top, it's so dramatic. And his nephew, who is Carolyn Bessette's son, Jack Schlossberg, has come out and said he's, for those wondering whether our family was ever consulted or has anything to do with a new show being made about him, the answer is no, and there's not much we can do about it. photos have come out from set, and it's so funny what people are commenting on. The cast have been cast, obviously, and Caroline Bessette, she was all class, and when it comes to fashion, simple but absolutely stunning. And there's shots of her running through New York, and people are going, I don't think I ever saw her wear a pair of Converse. Why is she wearing a pair of Converse? And based on that alone, people are starting to go, I don't know if Ryan Murphy is the right person for this.
Now, is it known how, is it all of JFK's life or a particular
section
of it?
It's their love story.
Yeah.
It's their love story. So, and Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, that was her last name, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jackie O. Yeah.
She is being played by Naomi Watts, who, and this is the thing with Ryan Murphy, once you get in with him, you're sort of in with him for life.
Yeah,
yeah. And she's done a few things. So, look, I'll be watching. I don't think we will get the full story, especially when the family's not involved. There's only so much you can do when you're reading historical papers and stuff.
It's JFK and there's a romance and he can't keep his trousers up. So, I mean, exactly. There's more than enough there for a Ryan Murphy
and
production.
And I would say that's what the family's probably worried about, because if the family were involved, you know we wouldn't have a lot of that stuff about JFK Jr. So this is what the family are concerned about.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll all be watching, though, won't we?
Yeah. We all know. Anyway, who you think you're fooling? Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Elio. Here's a clip.
Look at me in the eye and for once, tell me the truth.
Shmeepa de Goomeeba.
No, I'm not learning Elio-ese.
Pusipo muchango gumishazo.
Major Solis.
You going to the seminar tonight? There'll be a speaker from the astronaut selection program.
No, something came up.
Oh, is this the nephew we've heard so much about?
Yes, that's him.
Gluto!
Stop it. I don't know if this is boundary testing or sleep regression or... Which one of these is you?
I don't know, but I think that one is you.
Okay, I've got one last meeting, so I need you to sit here and not move or speak or injure yourself for 10 minutes. I have enough to deal with already.
Right. Okay. So this is kind of skewing towards a slightly younger audience, would you say?
Yeah, I would think so. So one of the characters you would have heard in the clip there besides Elio was his aunt Olga. And the whole idea is that Elio was recently orphaned after his parents died in a car crash, and his aunt Olga has essentially adopted him. And it's actually thanks to Olga that his like fascination with space is kind of inspired, because Olga, and if you recognise the voice there, actually, it was Zoe Saldana. So she works as an orbital analyst, which is essentially kind of monitoring space debris and making sure that, you know, Earth is kind of kept safe from it and everything. And she actually gave up an opportunity to become an astronaut in order to raise him. So because they're both like surrounded by like, you know, intergalactic stuff, and he's blown away by an exhibit that they kind of visit together and everything, he ends up like exposed to this world of space and starts to wonder if that's really where he belongs, instead of like, you know, here on Earth where he's kind of struggling. He has behavioral issues, although not really. It turns out he's just kind of your average, like, slightly bratty child at times. But he doesn't have friends or anything like that. So he is struggling. So, you know, that kind of element of the story, I suppose, is a bit poignant and is going to, you know.
Yeah. Okay. The usual, when they do it well, there's something, you know, there's one for the kids, one for the parent that's with them.
Yeah,
does it still do that?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I found that it probably was getting a bit stronger in like the second half of the movie. So basically, Elio does eventually get like a abducted by aliens, which is what he's always kind of wanted. And he goes to this place called the Communiverse, which I thought like wasn't that kind of inspired in its design. Like, it's all kind of aquatic. And it reminded me of a recent Disney movie from a couple of years ago called Strange World, which I also wasn't like a massive fan of. I thought that in terms of like genre, you know, you've got a lot of the kind of tried and tested kid movie themes here. There are dead parents. There's a father and son kind of struggling to compromise. You've got the bad guy who wants to like take over the world, or the universe. But I thought the second half of the movie was stronger. Elio meets kind of the bad guy, who's Lord Grygon, who's voiced by Brad Garrett. And that's when things kind of start to get a bit interesting, because he basically befriends this alien called Glordon. And this is the very first friend that Elio has ever made. And their relationship is actually really, really cute, really touching. You see them kind of exploring space together and just getting really excited. And it is kind of a really touching, like, sweet relationship. But it's one of those movies that kind of is
relying a lot on, like, kind of, like I said, those tried and tested tropes. And in terms of like story, it's just kind of trying to keep the momentum going, trying to keep the kids invested and stuff like that. I just didn't think that it was quite like as memorable as like other movies that we've seen. And it doesn't have that kind of big tearjerker moment that you would have remembered in something like Coco or, you know, Toy Story, you know, 3 or something like that. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Now, finally, and for people listening who think, oh, I haven't got around to watching the Four Seasons on Netflix yet, this is the bit where you put your hands over your ears and go, no, 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 no. Because they're making a second one and Steve Carell dies in the first one. So
I'm so glad you're the one who said that.
how could they make a second one? Because it was a whole premise almost of the series.
But I think they can make a second one because they're going to see where the friends go off with it. And we're not going to reveal how it ended, but remember there was a big
But
there was another cliffhanger as
Yes.
Do you remember that bit? Yeah, so yeah. I suppose they can further develop that one. But Tina Fey has come out because everyone just keeps going, but we want Steve Carell back. And she's like, do you know what? The biggest mistake I made in my career is killing Steve Carell off. Because she said she had all this mapped out before they even cast him. And then they cast him and he went, not again. This is like similar to what happened in The Morning Show because he died. Sorry if you haven't seen The Morning Show. He dies in the same way on The Morning Show.
We freed up loads of time for people for the weekend.
But she has said that, I don't know, he may appear. She's not ruling out that he may appear in flashbacks, but the second season is going to take the same format. Some people are like, oh, but people don't take 4 holidays a year. And she's like, we're not necessarily taking 4 holidays a year. You know, we're going down to visit our kids 1 year at college and
They do, because they're all loaded.
Yeah, they are.
Like, they're all driving, like, cars the size of most people's houses, and there's only the two of them.
But it was great, though, wasn't it? Did you enjoy 4 seasons?
I did, yeah.
I'm interested to see what, because Tina Fey's behind it as well, I think it could work. I'm interested to see what she does with season 2, because she can make this her own.
Yeah, okay. That's all out for today. Thanks to Serena and Leslie and Deirdre.
Movies and Booze. I'm Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.